Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network, folks. It's me, Gene. We're going to get our Wednesday limited series of Doc Talk fired up right now. And welcome to the TPO Doc Talk presented to you by Battle Born Tackle. Folks, this is our Wednesday series. These interviews that we did here, these are with different anglers around the All-American Kayak Series, around the Midwest. And these are just some cool cats that we have been introduced to. We got a chance to meet out there on the road when we're fishing around. And so we wanted to just kind of highlight some of these from all around the country. We had last Wednesday, Mr. Andy Moore. This week, we've got Mr. Elvis Lee joining us from Minnesota, from the great up north there, man, is the interview that we're going to go ahead and play for you here coming up shortly. Again, just to be a reminder, Battle Born Tackle, at Battle Born Tackle, hashtag Battle Born Tackle. They are the show sponsor for us here, veteran-owned online tackle distributor. Stick with us here because coming up next week, we're going to start sharing some codes, get you some extra discounts for listeners here. We're going to start doing some giveaways on our live show here. Battleborn's going to make it so that we can do a lot of cool things out here, man. So AJ and the crew over there, it's going to be pretty awesome here going forward. So without further ado, let's go ahead real quick here, and let's go ahead and fire up this Elvis Lee interview. We hope you enjoy the show. Remember, this is a pre-recorded episode. We are not live. It says we're live here, but that's just the way we broadcast out. But this is a pre-recorded deal here, and let's hope you enjoy this older interview that's about 30, 45 days old or so, but still very relevant here. So enjoy the show, and we'll talk to you soon. And welcome to another edition of the All-American Kayak Series Podcast, Doc Talk. What's happening, folks? By the time you see this here, this recording that we're doing, it'll probably be after the holidays. Hope you all had a fantastic holiday season out there, and Santa provided you with a solid Fishmas and all that good stuff. Man, we're gearing up. 2024 season is going to be just off the chain. Really excited about these venues, how they're working out here, all the events that we have lined up. Of course, for me personally, the Kentucky Lake event looks like it's just going to be just phenomenal. Can't wait to get to that one. In our series of interviewing anglers, we've been trying to kind of go around the country, around the area here, obviously in the heartland of America, the Midwest, which is what the All-American focuses on. As you've seen the other schedules come out, whether it's a big series, whether it's a big bass series, you notice that they continue to dance around the Midwest quite a bit. And that is something that we are dedicated to here with the All-American, is to continue to try to find ways working together with the anglers, with the local locations there, to make these things possible, man. And so that's what Mr. Booth has created for us here, and that's what we're all set out. So in our series, we're going up north, man. We're going up north here for the interview series. We're going to Minnesota. We have with us tonight a guy that's no stranger to fishing whatsoever, and has fished several of the All-American Kayak Series events over the past years. We have Mr. Elvis Lee joining us from Maplewood, Minnesota. Mr. Elvis Lee, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How about you, Gene?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. So, man... It's December when we're recording this. You guys covered in snow up there, or is it abnormally warm?
It's quite warm this year. It's crazy because, I used to be big into cycling, and I was, did a lot of races when I was, probably 10 years back. And one of my Facebook memory popped up that I did 109 miles with a friend this time. Back in 2017 or 2016, and
109-mile race.
Yeah. No, that was just a bicycle ride. So,
oh yeah, just a ride.
Yeah, so
you're crazy.
I mean, I'm. I haven't cycled in the last 3-4 years, so it's been a while. Anyways, yeah, it's abnormally warm. Usually, I remember last year, we were already out ice fishing this time, but yeah,
right.
I've seen people out ice fishing already, but it's a little sketchy. It's been a little too warm for me to want to go out. I'll probably wait until after Christmas and probably get out a few times.
You a big ice fisherman, man? You look forward to that as much as you do, open water?
I was when I first got into a few years back. I was, going out almost every other day. But as I got more serious into kayak fishing and competing, I kind of just stopped going. I mean, I probably go out a handful of time. That's how much I've been doing the last couple of years. My oldest son, he loves ice fishing, and we try to go early ice fishing because that's usually about the time I get to go. And I told him, I was like, well, once my fishing license expired, which is the end of February, I stopped ice fishing. So right. I just wait for open water, I enjoy ice fishing, but I'm not like crazy. Like I only go chase panfish during ice, right? Cause I enjoy panfishing. And I'm not one of those guys who would, drive up to Mille Lacs or Red Lake or whatever to go catch walleyes. I'm not a walleye guy, so panfish.
It's the gateway drug, right? The gateway fish, the panfish. That's what got us all into bass fishing to begin with, right?
Yeah, because before the bass fishing and all that, it was the crappie fishing, mainly crappie fishing, and then bluegills with my kids. This is probably, I want to say 5-6 years ago, when my two oldest were still a little young. I mean, my daughter, she's 12 now, but she used to go with me. I was like an avid float tube angler. I did that for 2-3 years, probably a little bit longer than that. And my daughter was like my ride and die. She was only like 8 at that time. And, she'd go with me. We'll go float any lake we can find. And, she would just, just bluegills and crappies, and
yeah,
you know, so I have a love for crappie fishing, you know, and, awesome. And bluegills too, as long as, you know, they're big bluegills. And you know, I tell people this, I'm just like, you know, I feel that, you know, if you're a good pan fisherman, you can become a really good bass angler, because especially if you're a finesse guy, right? I mean, I would say I'm a finesse guy at heart, you know.
Yeah.
You know, especially crappie fishing, it's like, you know, it's a lot of, I feel like it's a lot of finesse fishing. You know, I don't do the whole bobber thing. I'm just basically like a 1/32nd or maybe sometime a 1/16 jighead with a piece of, you know, like a 1.5-inch plastic, piece of plastic. No bobber, yep. Just cast out there and then just watch the line, you know.
Yep.
And I feel that kind of ties into bass fishing, right? Finesse fishing.
Right.
Because you're just feeling for that bite, or you're watching your line jump. And that's all you're doing. It's very slow fishing. It's very, I mean, I know a lot of guys can't stand fishing that slow, but
yep.
You know, I've done it enough to where, you know, if I have to switch from power fishing to finesse, I can do it, you know, because I mean, nice. I fished like a 1/15-ounce Ned rig in like 30 feet of water. I just cast out, let this thing all in the bottom, and just slowly work it, you know, because sometimes that's what you have to do. I feel like, especially up in Minnesota, you know, I think finesse fishing would definitely, you know, help you cut a check.
Well, you know, and I lived in Rochester area there for like 10 years. We were talking off air about that. And yeah, man, around the Twin Cities, there isn't a body of water up there that doesn't get just hammered on during open water season. So it makes total sense that, you know, as time goes on and the pressure continues to rise on those bodies of water, moving to that finesse presentation is going to help you in a major way, you know, kind of separate you and lock up that limit and lock up maybe a little better quality for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy how some of my biggest bass that I've caught has been from a Ned rig, you know, and guys don't believe me until they come out there and fish with me, you know, and watch me catch them in, you know, 20, 30 feet on a little, you know, like I say, a little 2.5-inch, you know, bait. And
yeah,
like I said, it's very boring, but once you develop that feel and, you know, just the technique, in general, you know, you can really do a lot of damage up here, you know, especially like I say, especially around the grass, like the deep grass edges, because some of these grass edge girls, I mean, you can find them in 30 feet of water.
Well, you know, the funny thing about finesse too is that finesse fishing travels the entire country, no matter yes. where, what zone you're in, no matter where you're at. Finesse fishing, such as Ned rigging and drop shotting and wacky rig, this catches fish from East Coast to West Coast and even across the pond. It's an indiscriminate, you know, bait, man. It just goes after, you know, and the fish come after it. You can't say the same thing for like buzz baits and you know, and spin rigs and, you know, and chatter baits and stuff. That doesn't always, you know, like here in Colorado, you got a really small window where you're going to get away with some, you know, and it's got to be on the right body of water where you're going to, you know, be able to throw a spook out there, throw a, you know, a buzz bait or whatever. It's not you don't have as big a window out here to find success. Can you catch fish? Sure. Onesie twosies, but nothing that you would want to go in with a game plan on, you know, I mean, if you do, you're in trouble.
Right.
I think that's why the guys from the California side, the Skeet Reeses, the Aaron Martins, you know, all these guys that come out of that West Coast, that's why they travel so well on the upper level. They've learned how to fish, you know, really tough conditions, and they've learned to fish that finesse side. And yeah, like you said, man, if you learn that skill set, you can do some serious damage with that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything else. You just got to know when to apply it and when to put it away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the first couple of years that I started getting into kayak tournament fishing, and I think I use it too much. Like, I couldn't let go of it. And what really did it for me was going to lacrosse and just basically getting my butt handed to me, right? Because I was just trying to throw this Ned rig, trying to make it work on lacrosse. And, you know, I think it was the Hobie BOS. And I actually met Drew Gregory. That was the first time I actually met him. And, you know, first day didn't do good. I threw away a couple of fish that would have put, that would have got me a limit. But I was like, you know, they're 12 inches. I was like, I'll probably catch some more, you know. And I ended up only landing three, missed three. And, you know, I only had three fish. And I was like, oh, you know, it's like, ah, this kind of sucks, you know. So I saw Drew. I met Drew at the boat ramp, and I was talking to him. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, because this is my first time ever doing a national event, right? So I asked him, I was like, so, you know, since he's a, I guess you would call him a veteran, right? He's got the experience. And I asked him, I was like, you know, is it even worth it for me to come back out day two and fish? He's like, oh yeah, absolutely. You know, you still have big fish or the power move, you know, at that, I don't know if they still have power move on for the Hobie BS, but at that time there was a power move where they award someone with the biggest jump from day one or day two, or from, yeah, day one or day two. And they give them like a battery, right? Yep. And he's like, yeah, man, you still have that. You know, you still have big bass, you know, don't get discouraged. Just go out there and just have fun. You know, literally just go have fun. So I said, okay, well, you know what? I already spent, I think it was like $280 or something for it. It's like, well.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
I'm in town. You know, I'm already spent all this money. Might as well go on day two and try and learn something, right? So I went, and then day two was actually pretty fun. I caught a lot of fish, you know, did some froggings, which I'm not really good at, did some frogging. A lot of, you know, found an area where I could throw a wacky rig early in the morning, and they were just, because they were just busting shad everywhere. I was throwing a wacky rig, and I was catching them. And then, you know, day's over, day two's done, whatever, awards. You know, at that time, it was like, I think it's right after COVID, so they didn't really have, you couldn't go meet up there. You just,
right. You know, it was all virtual.
Right. So I think Drew was the last person to catch Chet. And I was listening to him, and he was talking about how, you know, he was throwing a spinnerbait who was changing the blade color because the water came up, you know, it got muddy. And I was just like, man, you know, it's like, so he was power fishing. He was doing all this technique that I didn't do, right? I've never was a fan of a spinnerbait because the time before this, the time that I ever caught fish were just northerns, right? And I was just like, I don't want to catch a bunch of northern. And Drew was the one who kind of showed me that, you know, these kind of conditions, you have to present a bait that these bass can actually see in those kind of water conditions.
And feel, yeah.
Right, feel, you know, the ladder line. So it got me thinking, and after that, I was just like, okay, well, I'll start introducing bladed jigs, spinner baits, and I started, you know, catching more fish, like in those kind of scenario, right? And then I kind of put the net rig away after I jumped into that, and I started just power fishing, bladed jigs, yeah. Net rig, spinner bait, and buzz bait, you know? And I fished the river quite a bit. Usually the time I go to the river is in the fall when everything kind of mellows down and there's not much going on. I go to the river with my two boys and then we go chase river smallmouth. And that's when I really got a sense for the spinnerbait and the buzzbait, you know, chasing river smallmouth with that stuff. Cause I'm just like, wow, you know, river or smallmouth in general, you know, you always see people talk about a net rig or a drop shot or something finessey, right? Oh. So
smallmouth like, on topwater are a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
They really are.
Like, you know what? I'll throw a buzzbait and see if I can catch them. And oh my god, it was the bite was just amazing. I just, you know, I was like, oh man, this spinnerbait, buzzbait. And then I fished this river system the last couple of years, and I noticed what was going on. You know, it's the upper Mississippi. You know, it's about 3 hours north of La Crosse. That's where the smallmouth becomes really, you know, it gets really fun, right? Yeah. You're talking about a river system where all you're catching is just smallmouth. You know, you'll catch a largemouth here and there, but those are like unicorns on this part of the river.
Right.
You know, you're just catching, you know, a lot of 17 to 19 inch smallmouth. A
lot more current up there, right?
Yeah, a lot more current. You're actually doing floats. You can't really go upstream unless you got some kind of boat or you know, maybe a torpedo will be able to go upstream, but for the most part, we're just doing float, you know. So,
yep.
Lots of, you know, big fish, big giant smallmouth, you know.
Now, have you always been in Minnesota with your fishing? Is that where you kind of learned to bass fish, right north there?
Yes. So I'm originally born in California, around the Fresno area. So we moved up to Minnesota around 96, and I was about 9 years old at the time.
Nice.
And so I learned how to fish up here. You know, I got into, I mean, I fished my whole life, but I got married at a young age, and pretty much when I got married, I didn't really do much fishing anymore. And so fishing was just on and off. And then, you know, I got heavy into cycling and did a lot of races. And then, you know, I got to the point where I'm just like, oh man, I kind of want to do a sport or something that I can get to enjoy with my kids as they grown up, you know. And
I
love fishing. And at the time, my oldest son, he was only 10 and he loves fishing, but I never really made the time to go and fish with him because I'm always training as far as cycling go. And I was like, you know what, let's just put this thing on hold and let's just go do something that I can enjoy with all the kids, right? And so we got into fishing.
Good choice, Dad. Good choice.
So we got into that, got into float tube fishing. Did that for a few years. And actually, you know, before the bass, it came. So after the panfish, it came the pike, right? Because I was like, oh, everybody can catch a bass. That was before I even knew anything about bass fishing, really. So I was like, yeah, anybody can catch a bass because, you know, we caught plenty of bass on crappie jigs. And I was like, well, I want something bigger, right? So I was like, well, let's just go chase some northern pike because
I've got plenty of them up there. Yeah.
There's many, you know. And I was like, yeah, I want to catch like a 30 or 40 plus inch one, but I spent a summer, you know, throwing big baits. That's where the big baits came for me. You know, I started throwing big baits for northerns before I even tried to even apply that to bass fishing. And I actually caught bass throwing big baits, you know, so I was like, wait a minute. Okay, these bass big baits. So, you know, and then I was, you know, I'm a competitive person. So I started looking around. I was like, well, I kind of want to do some tournaments. So just to kind of test where I'm, you know, my skill level is at. And there's this local club. And it's not even a club. It's more like a group, just a bunch of friends. And then, you know, I asked them, I said, hey, is there any way my son and I can come out and do a tournament with you guys? And, you know, these are just all kite anglers, right?
Yeah.
And then they were like, yeah, sure. The more the merrier, you know, we just kind of getting started. So, you know, the more people we can get, the better. So I said, okay. So I showed up and it was weird, you know, because I was still in a float tube, right? I pull up to the boat ramp and got unloaded, and everyone around me was, there's like probably 22 of us. Everyone else was on a kayak but me. And I just look so out of place. I feel so out of place. You know? So, It was funny, and I remember no one talked to me, right? And my friend Danny, you know, then that was the first time I met him, but now he's like my travel partner. We do a lot of events together, and he was the first person to ever approach me, you know. So it's just like, man, you know, like I know how it feels to be out of place and to just show up and no one wants to talk to you because you look different, right? So he approached me and then we started talking, and you know, the tournament started. So I'm on a float tube. Guys are on kayaks. So, you know, the max speed I can go on a float tube is like 1.2 miles per hour. So I was stuck fishing around, you know, the lake wasn't big. I think the lake was like, you know, 600, 700, probably about 800 acres or so. So I was stuck fishing around the boat ramp, by the boat ramp. And at the time, I was just throwing a lot of crankbaits, right? I was throwing a lot of, was it the striking, God, what is those?
1.5s or?
No, they're deep divers.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. They go down to about 12 to 15 feet. So I had a few of them on. I was just like casting. And this is before I even knew like a dedicated rods and all that. My brother was, my younger brother, he got into bass fishing way before I did. So he gave me a rod, right? A Shimano Crucial crankbait rod. So it was a 7-foot, you know, moderate action. And that was like my favorite rod, right? Because at that time I didn't know anything. So it was the perfect rod for the right job. I didn't really know what I was doing. I watched a lot of YouTube video and talk about offshore fishing. And, you know, I'm on a float too with like this this Garmin Striker 5 so I can read my depth and all that. And there was no mapping. It was just, you know, 2D and down imaging. So
okay, that takes a skill set, man, to throw out 6 hooks with something that those hooks could penetrate and sink you. That takes some skill.
Yeah, it's not as scary as people make it out to be, right? Those things are really bulletproof. You know, so nice. Anyway, so I just started scanning. I started going offshore looking for the deepest grassage I can find. And I just cast that thing and just basically burn it as fast as I can. And I had an 8.1 gear ratio. And that was a workout. That was not, you know, it was my arms were like about to fall off at the end of the day.
I bet.
To my surprise, I actually end up taking second place in that event.
Good stuff.
Know? And the last fish that I caught, you know, because I didn't really know the rules then. I just knew that, you know, the hooks had to be in its mouth or by its face. But this one actually hit it. And for some reason, I set the hook and then it hooked it on the side. Mm. So I brought it in. I said, well, you know, ethically, I can't really submit this fish because, or morally, I should say, it's not. You know, it didn't get hooked where it needs to be. So I just, because that fish would have put me in the winning. I would have won that event if I had submitted that fish. But I knew that it just didn't feel right. You know, I was like, you know, I just, this is not me. So I let the fish go. And I was like, oh, man, you know, kind of sucks. And then my buddy Danny, he came back and he went all the way to the end of the lake, came back. And I was just talking to him, see how his day was going. And he's like, oh, man, you know, I did a shit move, you know, fish, my biggest fish, like a 19 something. It's like, it flopped off. And, you know, now, you know, he was all depressed and I kind of feel bad for him at the time, but I'm just like, you know, I still got to look out for myself too.
So, yeah, for sure.
And you know, the crazy thing, I thought I was hot shit, right? I was like, oh man, you know, I just I'm in like this $300, $350 float tube. And I'm just throwing crankbaits all day. That's all I did. I was throwing crankbaits, you know. Yeah. And you know, second event rolls around, which was the same, the following fall. And the crazy thing is, so like I said, go back to a float two and a kite, right? Float two, you can't cover water. I don't remember. My God, it took me like 45 minutes straight just to kick from the boat ramp to one island by the boat ramp, which is only like maybe half a mile away. It took me 45 minutes just straight kicking just to get there. Yep. And I sat there all day just throwing the crankbait, doing the same thing over and over. And I was a little disappointed because I wanted to win, because at that event, you know, first place takes home a kite, right? And I wanted to win it so bad because I wanted to get the kite for my son, right? And I end up tying for first as far as total inches go. But the other guy, he got the bigger fish, so he won, right? So he won the tiebreaker. So I was a little disappointed, but I was like, you know, and the guy that won is my buddy Danny Z. Anybody that knows Minnesota kayak fishing scene knows how good Danny Z is because he's won a lot of tournaments, right? So nice. I'm not thinking to myself, I was like, you know what? I'm still pretty good because I just lost to him. I beat everyone else, right? So
yeah.
I feel too bad, and I went home with a little bit of gas money. I was like, yeah, you know what? It's cool. So the following year, I did the same thing. Me and my buddy Danny, my other buddy Danny, we actually started hosting, we call them pickup tournaments. It's just more like, you know, smaller tournaments, cheap entry fee to kind of get guys involved. And me and him were like the tournament directors, you should say. So we were hosting those events, and I actually did pretty good in that. That whole season, I think the worst finish I did was like a fifth place, but everything else was like, you know, top threes. I did win one event at the end of the year, and I was so happy because I was like, oh man, I just want to win one event and float to and beat all these kayak guys, right? And I ended up doing that. So then I was like, okay, well, I wanted to get more competitive. I start seeing guys like, you know, doing like KBF, Hobie, and the Bass stuff. And
in what year? What years? Give me an idea of what time frame we're talking about here. How many years ago?
So 2021 was the first year I started kayak tournament fishing.
Gotcha. Nice.
So before then, I was just fishing out of the float tube.
Yep.
And then so 2021 came around. There was the opportunity to become a tournament director for the Slay Nation Kayak Series. And I jumped on it. I became the tournament director. It was just a lot of, you know, that was my first year actually officiating these kind of events, getting permits approved and all that. And it was just so much for me to take on. And I was just overwhelmed with, you know, some of that stuff. And I couldn't focus on fishing because I was actually fishing the tournaments and trying to judge at the same time. I'm just like, you know what? I can't do with this. And it's just,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I end up not doing good at all at most of the events because I was just, you know, I was just, mine was somewhere else. So I decided that 2022, I'm just going to focus on being an angler and just go on half fun and try to learn. So that's what I did. You know, I've had some success and some not so good results. Like, you know, when Bass came to La Crosse back in 2021, that fall, it was still a one-day event. So I fished that event, and I actually was the last person to make the cut for the top 10% to go to the championship. Nice. So I ended up in ninth for that event. Catch a little bit of check, and then it was me and one of my brother-in-law. He took fifth in that event. So the following spring, which would be 2022 of March, we drove down to South Carolina for the Bassmaster Kayak Championship. And that was the first time I've ever actually.
That was on Hartwell, right?
It was on Russell. So
Russell.
Yep. So that was gotcha. My first time ever fishing out of Minnesota. And
knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
And I didn't have a good experience at all.
It's a different world, man.
It's different. It's different. And that was before I even have a motor. And I was just paddling, and I'm just like, go here. And I was like, oh my God, there's no grass. Like, what do I do? Like, how do I fish? There's no grass, right? Because it's all grass fishing for the most part, you know? And there's no grass. I didn't know how to fish it. I didn't know what I was doing, you know? And our lakes, like, we don't have, you know, people talk about creek channels, channel swing banks, all that. We don't have that in Minnesota.
No.
We just, you know, a lot of natural grass lakes.
So I was going to say, they're all natural lakes up there, you know, and it sets up, the bass act different. Yeah, yes. The rule of thumb from the north is find the grass, find the bass, you know, that's. Exactly. And when you go to these places, these lowland reservoirs or these highland reservoirs, that are all man-made, man, it's like, if there's grass, it's usually not in the water, you know? Yeah.
Yes, yes, I agree. So I had a tough time. Day one, I didn't do good. I only had like three fish. I was, you know, I kind of picked up on the pattern too late in the day. You know, I brought a bunch of stuff. You know, I caught schooling spotted bass chasing bait fish in the middle of a creek arm with a bladed bait. Right? Just go out there, yo-yo it. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I can make this happen on tournament day. And it came around. It never happened. Like, I just like, right. Okay, what am I doing wrong? You know, and then I noticed the wind started picking up. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go throw a crankbait and see if I can catch something off wind-blown points. And I did. I caught three, lost one, and it was already too late in the day. And I was like, well, you know what? Let's try to see if we can capitalize on that pattern for day two. And I watched the weather, and the wind didn't pick up till like, I think 1 o'clock, and lines out was like 2:30 or so.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what, this is not going to work because there's no wind. These fish are, and I didn't know anything about draw, you know, these reservoir where they draw water, where, you know, when they pull water and these fish active, I didn't know anything like that. You know, I didn't
start create current. Yeah.
Right. So I didn't know any of that until after the fact that, you know, listening to Drew and there's another guy I can't remember. He's on the Old Town team, but you know, they did really good on day one, and then day two they pull water and their fish move. And I did not know that until they talked about it, and I was like, wow, these fish are so different compared to ours, because ours are landlocked lakes, right? So there's no current, nothing. Only current you're gonna get is from the wind, right? Or
exactly. Or,
so it's like, I did not know that. I didn't understand how to fish these type of fishery. I didn't know how much the current affect these fish, because I mean, everyone talk about current when they talk about like on the TVA or whatever. They say, oh yeah, you know, this current. And I'm just like thinking to myself, it's like current. Okay. Current to me is fishing the upper Mississippi where there's actually current where you're flowing down. Right.
Yep.
But when they talk about current, they're talking about underwater current where you don't really see the current, but it's there, right? So I did not understand any of that, you know. So I had a hard time adjusting fishing in the South.
I'll tell you, I became far more locked in on the current situations when I got out of my boat and into a kayak, because the kayak gets affected by that. You can actually, you know, you can actually see the drift start to occur. We were on Pickwick a couple of years ago. And there was, I could tell right when they started to pull, you could almost see, it's like, yep, okay, they're pulling now. Cause my motor for spot lock would have to, you know, engage a little bit heavier to hold me on those points and so forth. Yep. And it was just such a small window that it would occur. So yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's, you know, as a grown man, that was the first time, like after day one, that was the first time I feel like crying.
Right.
I'm just like,
gut punch.
I got my ego hurt so bad. I'm just like, oh man, like what am I doing? Like I feel like, because you know, I have so many people supporting me and behind me, and I'm just like, damn, I feel like I was like, I feel like I failed everyone, right?
Right.
I feel so bad. I was just like, man, you know, like people were counting on me, and I'm just like, man, this is not a good feeling. And you know, after day two, and I was like, whatever. Because my son actually had went down with me to that event, but my sister lives in North Carolina, so she came and picked him up for the weekend to spend with her. So I was like, well, you know, let's just stop by the Classic because it's on the way to pick up my son anyway. So
there you go.
I stopped by the Classic, and I saw Dusty Yacker, and I was talking to him. And I was telling him my experience and how bad. And he's like, dude, don't feel bad, man. Everyone goes through that. I talked to Bailey from Bailey Ibritt. I can't remember what's their fishing podcast. Anyways, I talked to him. He said the same thing. He's like, don't worry about it. Everybody goes through it. You know, not everyone can win every day, right? So it's like, just, you know, you'll get over it. Just, you know, you'll be fine.
Yeah, get used to it in this sport, because you can fish it for 25 years and you're still going to have days like that. It's just, it's really what separates competitive angling in my mind from so many other sports. Normally other sports, you know, you work and you work and you work, and you kind of raise that bar each time, right? Each season, you know, you may not win, but you have a better output, right? You know, In this sport, you can go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, from day one to day 3,962. You can still go out there, and for whatever reason, things just don't come together. Exactly. It's a tough deal. When did you first get a chance to join with the All-American and jump in one of those events?
So that was back in 2021, my first year in a kayak.
And, oh, nice.
They came to La Crosse, and I and Minyak at the time. I didn't join Minyak because I was too busy being a tournament director for Slay Nation. So I hop on their event for that event because there was a joint event. So I double dip in Minyak and All American, and I actually, it was crazy because I went to a spot that I had done some white bass fishing with my brother-in-law off of a boat there, you know, like 6-7 years ago, maybe even longer than that.
Was that at La Crosse?
Yes, that was in La Crosse. Yeah. It was on Pool 8. And so I was like, you know what? Let me just go check this. So I went and checked that spot the day before the tournament, and I was looking for the wing dam, and I didn't really know what it looked like on my graph, but I just turned around, like I sat still for like 2 minutes, right, on the kayak, and I turned around, look around, and I saw ripples around, and I was like, oh my God, that's a wing dam right there. And then I saw them and just started busting shad out of nowhere. And I said, oh, wait a minute. So I cast a Ned rig over there, and I start catching them. And I caught like a 19 and a half smallmouth. I said, oh my God, this is a giant. I was like, okay, maybe I'll save the spot, come back next day. So that's what I ended up doing. I came back there for the tournament the next day, and I end up catching a 19. My biggest fish was a 19-inch smallmouth. And then I caught a few more smaller fish. And then I was like, okay, well, this is not working. You know, that was before I even knew how these fish were kind of, you know, how they move on the Mississippi. And, you know, there's so, like, the thing about La Crosse is everyone always talk about how good the pre-fishing was, right? That's what everyone talks about. Yeah. And tournament day, those smallmouth just absolutely move.
Yeah.
Right? So they're constantly chasing bait. And I was like, oh, man, this kind of sucks. You know, like, I'm sitting here catching them, you know, early in the morning. As soon as the sun came up, they were just busting shad for like a 30-40 minute window, right? And they just all of a sudden disappeared. And I was like, okay, I gotta scramble, I gotta put a limit together, I gotta go and just you know, stay in the area, but just hopefully you can get some to work. And I caught a few, I caught enough fish to put me in fifth for the All-American and fourth in the Minyak event. So I ended up catching a small check. And I was like, oh man, this is, you know, I thought I was hot shit again. You know, I was like, damn. And, you know, I got humble, you know, like after that, there's some events I did, I got humble. And, you know, especially, like I said, going down to the South and fishing something that's so different and so new to me, I just couldn't make that adjustment. And,
the Ozark lakes are like complete 180 flip. Yeah. For that, I actually went before I got into kayaks. I was living in Minnesota there in the boat game, and my buddy and I actually joined the Ozark series and started making those trips. So we started not fishing the Great Lakes division anymore that hit La Crosse three times. We did that for like 3-4 years, 5 years, whatever. But then we decided to just get into new water, you know, go hit something new. And so, yeah, that was. I never realized just how much finesse was such a big player, like say on Table Rock. You know, I think Table Rock, I think KVD, throwing jerk baits, throwing crank baits, you know, that's what was in my mind until you get down there and it's like, yeah, grab a Ned rig, pull that off that main point, you know, right there and watch the spots and the smallies go crazy, you know, for the thing. So,
yeah.
That's awesome stuff. So when you and I first like had a chance to talk, it was at Okoboji, I think.
Yes, it was.
We go to Okoboji, and that was last season, not this 23. That wasn't, was that 23?
23,
yep. Yeah, it was.
I was there 2022 and 2023, but 2023 was when we first, you know, met on the water.
Officially, yeah, got a chance to talk. I had found in leading up to it, I found something that I did not expect to find. You know, I had come across some fish sitting on a flat in those weeds, and they were the right ones, man. I backed off and was shaking them off. I was like, I'm not going to touch these. And I remember what you had said when you saw me out there that day. You were like, what is this guy doing? Clear the hell out here.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy, Gene, is that's typically how you win on Minnesota Grass Lake, what you were doing. That's the right way to do it. But it was just the wrong time, you know, because they were actually moving up to spawn. So typically,
I'll tell you what,
that's typically how I would fish it.
If the tournament was the day before, I was writing a check. I promise you, because they were there.
Yes, you know, and you know, it's crazy because you know, because I fished Okoboji the year prior, and I kind of went off a little bit off of history, right? And not just that, but just because the All American Kayak Classic was. I think it was a few weeks before that, right? It was it was a few weeks before that. So
two weeks.
Yes. And I was just like thinking to myself, I was like, well, it was crazy because for the classic, I got off work at midnight. I drove down, I fished all day, and I found fish on the mouths of creeks, right? So I was like, okay, well, I'll go and see if I can make that bite happen. And it turned out that those fish have actually moved up the next day to start betting. I did not know that until I talked to some of the guy at the house. They say, oh yeah, dude, for some reason these fish weren't here yesterday, but now they're here. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, what? Like, how does that even happen? You know, so I was like, okay, you know, so for day two for the All American Classic, I went into a different pocket and found betting fish. So my thinking for the Okoboji event, I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to the first day of Okoboji. I got off work in the morning. I drove down there. It's only 3 hours drive. Drove down there, went to a whole new part of the lake I've never fished before. I actually did pretty good there. I found bedding fish and all on a spinnerbait. It was crazy.
I was going to say, dude, you were wearing them out on a spinnerbait. Yes. I was watching that going, all right. Go get them. That was awesome.
Day one of Okoboji was all about the spinnerbait, right? So I've actually went up to one pocket, and I was like, well, this looks like a spawning pocket, right? And I was like, there's got to be some fish here, but I don't know, man. So I start casting toward the shoreline. There's so many carps everywhere. So I was like, let me just cast into this flat, in the middle of the flat. And it was so windy that I couldn't really see, but, you know, every time I go past it, you can kind of see, like, yellow spots. Like, I was like, oh, those got to be bass. And then I started casting a spinnerbait, just blind casting. I started catching fish. So I noticed, I was like, wait a minute. These fish are actually pulling up to these flats, starting to stage up and starting to bed, right? So I was like, okay, cool, whatever. So I caught a limit there. I slowly upgraded. And I was like, okay, let me make my way to the other side of the lake. Let me see if I can find something that's very similar. I actually end up finding more fish and did more upgrading. And I caught one fish that was a minute too late. You know, I didn't know that if the All-American gave you that 1 minute leeway, right? So I said, okay, I'm gonna submit it anyways. And then I got DQ'd, so I called Josh right away and I say, hey, I don't know, I don't know if you guys give anglers a 1 minute leeway to that lines out or not. And he's like, unfortunately, we don't. I said, oh man, I was kind of upset because I was like, man, that's gonna cost me, you know. And I was like, oh, this sucks. So I was like, okay, well. The whole night, I just kept thinking. I said, okay, where am I going to go for day two? Because I actually didn't beat my day one spot too hard because I was, like, thinking about going back there. And I was like, that's the decide. I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to go to day two for last year. So I went there. And, you know, I was just like, man, there's just – I'm right on this flat, right? I could see.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I could see beds. Beds everywhere. The water was so clear compared to the year before because it was just gentle.
Super clear.
Yeah, super clear, because the year before, it was so muddy, you couldn't see it, right? I'm talking about 4 feet of water, you couldn't even see the bottom. And this year was just so clear. I can see everything. I can see beds everywhere. I saw a few males here and there, and I was like, so I was like, okay, well, what if it's like the All-American where in the afternoon they start moving in, right? So
yeah.
I was like, okay, let me just go fish these docks, and let's just come back throughout the day just to see if those big females pull up. And the first dock I pull up to, I started from the walkway. I just threw a weightless wacky rig. I caught a small buck. I said, okay, cool, whatever. Worked my way to the front of the dock, and I did a horrible skip. Got in there, let it sink for a few seconds. I saw my line jump. So I set the hook, and I said, oh, my God, this is a giant. It's like a 20 and a half. Got that in. I was like, man, let me just go hit up all these docks and see what happened.
Yeah.
And I fished these docks, and I just like started catching them, and I noticed there was a pattern going on, right? So I actually saw a big fish on a jet ski lift, and I couldn't get it to bite. For some reason I skipped it, I scared it away. So I'm just like thinking to myself, it's like, okay, I'm saving you for the very last. I'm gonna come back and catch you at the very end of the day. So I went on about my day, and I noticed that these bass were setting up around clear docks, like super clear water. Cause some areas of the lake was super muddy, some were super gin clear. And I noticed they weren't under the docks because those carp were under the docks, but those bass were positioned. It's almost like a mouth of a creek where they're on the outside in between docks. I just kept them rolling back and forth, but I couldn't get them to bite. So what I know about sight fishing, as far as my experience go, is when I see that happen, I back off until I can't see them, and I cast in there, and I can get them to fire up. So I'll get one, and then I'll pull the little wolf pack. They'll come up, and then, I'll have to let them reset for 15, 20 minutes to come back and catch them. So throughout the day, I was just doing that in the same stretch, just going back and forth, 30 minutes left, and I was like, okay. Because in that time, I actually went back to where I launched out of where that spawning flat is. I checked on it twice throughout the day. There's no fish, so I was like, I can't rely on this. I got to just go do what I'm doing. So I saved that last fish, the last 30 minutes. I made my way back there. I'm not just like, okay, I know the fish is there. I can't see it, but I know it's there, right? Because all these big females were actually spawning on these dock posts. So, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to skip my wacky rig in between the dock and the jet ski lift. And for some reason, I skipped in there. I didn't know. I don't know how I got the fish out of there. I hit spot log, and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to let this fish do his thing and see if I can get it out there. For some reason, I was able to pull out, and there was a guy fishing there, and I was yelling, hollering. I was so excited. I told the guy, I was like, oh, man, I think I'm going to go home with a check today, And I was so excited, and then a couple minutes left, and I went back to the first dock that I caught the big one, and I saw a giant fish in there. And then I skip my wacky rig in there, try to get it to bite, but it's like 2 minutes left. So I couldn't get it to cooperate. And I was like, you know what? I think I got this. I don't need that fish, right? Oh boy. What am I wrong? I went, it was the ceremony went there, and then they announced I got fifth, right? Yeah, I got fifth.
Yeah,
I just like, oh man, like Tyler beat me. And I was like, see, the thing was that if I caught that fish, that would have counted day one, it would have put me in fourth. I would have just bumped up one spot. But I was just like, I was so excited. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to go home with a nice hardware. I'm going to go home with some cash. And it's just like, nope, that didn't happen.
Still, so, dude, fifth place against that group of anglers. I mean, that's something. I mean, the one cool thing about the All-American for sure is that when you go fish against these guys, it is, it is a more relaxed field, but I don't take that as a relaxed skill set. The anglers you're going to face, you're facing some of the best anglers in the country. I mean, it just so happens we all, you know, they all live in the Midwest.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, so when you place a top five or a top 10 at an All-American event, man, that's something to be proud of for sure. That's good stuff. Yeah. Well, you know, you were mentioning this about the big bait stuff there, and I noticed a post that you had on Facebook there, and sitting right behind you, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about those real fast here. What do we got sitting behind us here, the big glides?
I got some of these are the Dream Smashers soft baits. These are 6 inches. These are actually made locally. And then I got these are made by my uncle who lives in California. This is a Big Game Custom Shad Glide. This is a 7-inch. And so I actually got one of this. So this is his new version of his bluegill glides. This is the slim gill glide. This is a 6.5-inch. And then I actually, at the time I was looking for, this is a crank down. This goes down to about, 12 to 15 feet.
And, nice.
At the time my uncle wasn't making any, cause these are all basically hand poured, handmade,
Wow.
He didn't have any in stock. And I found a guy that was selling this, and I wasn't a fan of this color because this is like a brown reddish and then with the clear belly. I wasn't a fan of it. I was like, what can go wrong? I can always send it out and have someone else paint it, right? So I bought it, got it in, and this was the last time I actually got to fish, which was a month ago, a little bit over a month, right before everything started icing out. And I took this out to the local lake, took live scope out, and I just started casting. And then I was off in deep water about 30 feet on a deep grass edge. And I scan out and I was like, okay, there's a school of bluegills, right? And about 40 feet in front of me. So I bomb cast this. I'm like, I'm on 20-pound mono, so it's not going to sink as deep as I like to. But it got down to about 11, 12 feet. And about 50 feet away, I can see the bait and life scope. So I was just cranking pause. And then as soon as I went through that below that school of bluegill, I paused it. I saw something flashing in like 22 feet of water off the grass edge, just shooting up. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't know if that's a bass or a pike, because usually the pike, they're pretty big on life scope. You can kind of tell.
Yeah.
But the thing was just flashing so fast that I didn't know if it was a bass or a pike. So I kept cranking pause, and like 20 feet away, like about 30 feet away from me, I paused it. And then it was still sitting about 10 feet, right? And then that bass just shot up. It looked at it. And as soon as I did one hand crank, and I was about to do no way, it just smashed it. And I set the hook, and I was like, oh my God, it's a freaking bass. I was like, wait a minute. I've never seen anything like this before, because I was just like, this bait, like really, this bait has that much drawing power.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy cow. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, well, I think it's, I gotta give credit to Jordan Westerman, because it was because of him. That's why I got into this big bait binge lately, because I've thrown big baits in the past for northern pikes and bass, and I wasn't really super hardcore. But after hearing what he did at that Big Bass 250 event on Lake of the Ozark, he was throwing a rat, right? And I was like, a rat? Like, what? Like, what? And he was like, yeah, he was just like, especially when you're fishing these bluff walls and all this, like these lakes down there, you got rodents living in these holes. And then rain. And he told me that when it rained, the bite got even better for him. And I'm just like scratching my head. I was like, dude, how does that make any sense? And he's like, well, you got to think about it. They live in these holes. And when the water rises and it floods their home, they got to go. They got to get out of the water. Right. And he was like, well, these bass are smart. They know that. So they're waiting, just looking up, waiting for these rodents to come out. They go up there and snatch it. And he's like, yeah, like he told me, he's like, yeah, the bite got even better when it started raining even harder. It was just like crazy. And I was like, what? Like, I just like lost my mind.
Jordan does some crazy stuff, yeah, man. And he makes it work. That's the thing. Yeah. He makes it work.
Exactly. So, and then I started talking to him. We started talking about big baits, and he was kind of like telling me, kind of like what to do, how to fish them. And he really just kind of, you know, ignite that big bait bite for me again, you know? So I reached out to my uncle. In the past, I wouldn't buy, like, these things are so expensive, and I wouldn't pay more for, like, more than $40 for a bait, right? And I just like, you know what, let me try this, and let me see if, you know, I end up spending so much money, and I'm just,
you know? Our sport does that to you, right?
Yes, yes. You know, so now I have all these big baits that will cover the whole water column that if I needed to, you know. And
that's awesome, man.
I'm actually looking forward to replacing my crankbaits with these big crankdowns. They're basically just big crankbaits. You know, that's a 7-inch bait, yep. You know, and it does the same thing. It's just, you know, it's just a bigger profile. And, you know, I love LightSco, right? I don't always use it, but it has helped me cash checks. And so it paid for itself, you know? So
sure, sure.
Using the crankbaits, I noticed that the crankbait has a lot of drawing power. And what you can do with LightSco is, you throw a bait out there, you get it, and you bring it in, and you just watch fish come out from the bottom that you don't even know that they're there. You know, and you go back and follow with the drop shot or net rig, and that's how I was catching some of these fish. You know, I'll just cast it out, wind it back, watch these fish come from the bottom, and go back and follow with the net rig or drop shot and catch them that way.
You know, that's so awesome, man. That's awesome.
But yeah, so
looking forward to 2024 here. You've put the schedule up there. You've been seeing what's out there. Yeah. What are some of the events that you're looking forward to hit, man, on the 2024 schedule with the All-American?
I'm planning to do all of them. You know, I've been telling myself the last few years that I need to get on the road and fish, and I want to win one event on the road. And the only way for me to do that is to actually do it. There's just no way. Like, I can't just fish up here, you know. Like I fishing in Minnesota, I feel like I can hold my own. You know, I do fairly well. Most of these events, I don't even pre-fish. I just show up and just fish, you know, and I've won and cash check doing that way. But I can't do that once I'm fishing in the South, you know, like, it's, you know, once I'm in like Missouri or more South, I can't do that because I don't know any of those. Like, it's just set up so different. They're freaking huge.
Yeah. And, big, know, water.
Right. So it's like, well, I got to take, you know, I actually have to spend time pre-fish, learn how these fish are, you know, how they set up, you know, see, it's all seasonal pattern. And people always, you know, it's funny because you watch YouTube and people say, oh yeah, you know, this time of year, you do this, you do that. And I'm just like, well, you don't have creek arms up here. How do I go fish like that? You know, when there's no creek arm, there's, yeah, you know, we don't, it's just all natural grass that we, you know, so most of these lakes are just bowls and it's just grass. And it's just like, well, it's so featureless. What do you do? Right. So down there, you have all these crazy looking topography. And it's just like, man, I need to spend time on how to fish those. Like, if I want to win or at least do well, I have to spend the time. So I decided that 2024 is going to be the year, my first year being on the road fishing. So I might not do any local stuff, but we'll see, you know, because I'm so busy working that, you know, I don't have time to really fish as much as I want to.
What do you do when you're not fishing? What do you do for a living?
So I work for a company called Interplastic, and what we do there is we make, you know, all kinds of resins. It could be for anything, countertop, nice, fiberglass boats, you know, all kinds of resins. So very cool. I've been with the company for almost 2 years, and it's just so much, like, a lot of mandatory overtime. And you know, so I don't get a fish. I mean, it may seem like I fish a lot because of my posting, but I don't get a fish a lot. You know, like I said, the last time I've been out was a little bit over a month ago, you know? Yep. So, I know the time on water is everything, but at the same time, if you're not learning when you're on the water, then you're just wasting time. Right. You know, so time on water is very crucial, but I don't think that it's everything, you know, unless that's what you do for a living. But you know, so I always try to listen to podcasts, different podcasts. I try to consume as much as I can while I'm not fishing, you know, because I feel like I can learn that way too. If, you know, if I'm not on the water, you know, so.
You know, you had mentioned something too, and this is something I encountered when I, because I lived up in Minnesota there for 10 years, and you had made, you know, mentioned that guys talk about, you know, creek channel swings and this and this, and we didn't have that on a lot of the lakes we fished. But there was also something that went on most of the time, and see if you concur with me on this. It was like we were stuck in a time warp too, because by the time all the information started coming out about spawning and it's the spawn and it's pre-spawn, and you know, the magazines are covering it, all the topics online, we still had freaking ice on the lakes. It's like, bro, our fish are not even close to that. They were like in the future of what we're gonna see. They're talking about dog days of summer, and we're like, dude, they're just now getting on beds up here. What are you talking about?
Right.
You know,
yeah, our season here is really short. I tell people that, you know, Minnesota, there's a season, right?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So you can't fish for bass until basically, I think it's like a Memorial weekend, like the weekend after Memorial.
Mother's Day usually. Yeah. Somewhere around there. Middle of May is before they open it up the season. Yes. Yeah.
So we don't get a chance. I mean, the only way to go is to go to Wisconsin or fish some of the border water, but that's river fishing. And so we don't really have that experience of what pre-spawn fishing is really like, you know, because, you know, once the season opens in May, then you have about 2 to 3 weeks and then they start spawning already. And the spawn happens so fast. And
yeah.
And it in some lakes, like especially if you're talking about northern and southern Minnesota, you know, the northern obviously is going to be a little later just because they don't get up to temp. You know, they're about 2 to 3 weeks later, right? So
yep.
I live in the metro area. So for us, you know, as soon as they start spawning, then the northern part just slowly starting there. Those fish are starting to stage, you know, so. Yep. The spawning period is so, it happens so fast. You know, I mean, you hear about guys talking about Florida and Texas where they spawn for a whole month. We don't have that here. It's like literally 2 to 3 weeks and that's it. That's it. You know, if you don't get on them, then you're never going to get on them until the following year, you know? So, you know, what I noticed in the past is as soon as ice out, just go fish shallow flats, shallow flats. Spawning flats, because those fish are going to be up their feet.
They're coming. Yeah, they're coming.
And they move differently. And not just that, you know, our bass live shallow water. Like guys will catch them in 2 to 4 feet of water under the ice, you know? So it's like those fish live shallow year round. You know, I mean, obviously you're going to have your resident shallow fish. And then you have your fish that migrates to the deep water and they come back in spring and, you know, whatnot. But yeah, you know, what I learned in the last two seasons is just as soon as iced out, you know, I'm talking about going to Wisconsin, right? As soon as the ice out, just go fish these shallow flats, spawning flats, and just chuck a line and bait. You know, it could be anything, you know, just a moving bait. Those fish are super active.
Father's Day was always, so I had a camper in a lot up there at Coon Lake.
Okay.
And Father's Day weekend, man, right, you know, a week before, a week after, right in that, all the way up probably, I would say, actually 2 weeks after, because you could take it right up to about 4th of July. Mm-hmm. It was just unbelievable fishing. It was almost very little skill involved because they were rampant, man. They were all through the lily pads. They were up against swim. One of the largest fish I've ever had hooked for a brief period of time actually was on Coon. I had thrown a little rat up against the edge of a swim deck. It was sitting out there, and there was one side of it that had a shadow cast on it from the time of day. I threw up into there, and freaking Basszilla, man, a mouth on the thing, just devoured. And as I set the hook, I felt just a little bit of tug, and then boom, come out of it. My son and I both, had it not come out of the water, we would have never known the size of it. My son and I saw the thing, and we're like, oh, my Lord. You know, I mean – and it was always around that, but you're right, man, because about after that, you start getting into July and those temps are coming up and things, then you got to start considering your deep grass edges and, things like that. If you want to find the quality. So,
right.
For sure.
You are right about the quality, finding them out deeper water. I feel like once it's summer, I feel like the majority of your quality fish are going to be out deeper in the deeper grass edge. Don't get me wrong. Guys are going to win, frogging or punching or flipping in shallow, stuff. But for me, I've always been an offshore guy. So, every chance I get to fish deep, I'm going to do it,
My buddy is too. He's an offshore guy. And I still remember we were on Waconia, and he found something sitting in about 22 foot of water, come in with a pair of twins, five and a quarters, two wow. twin. Yeah. He just decimated the field, man. He just laid waste to us that day. But that was in the boat days for sure.
You mentioned the two fives, it's crazy how, Minnesota we're not known for big bass. Right. And we're not known for big bass, but when you look at a lot of these boat tournaments, you got to have at least 20 pounds to even catch a check, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so many, like the 3 to 5 pound fish, they're just everywhere, Yes, we don't have this, 8, 9, 10 plus pound fish, but we do have plenty of, 4 to 5 pound fish, and that's usually what it takes to win up here, as far as boat tournament. If you're talking about, let's just say inches, right? So inches, most of the time you're going to be in the high 80s, low 90s. That's like anywhere else, and it's crazy. We did, we had an event around the metro area, the Twin Cities, and it was like a roadrunner, and the kid that won, he put up 97 inches, and I think he weighed all his fish, and he was like, it was close to 27 pounds.
Good Lord.
In a city lake where there's just traffic.
Tons of pressure. Yeah. Tons of pressure up there.
And it's just crazy. And I didn't know we have that kind of fish. And I know we have big fish, but I didn't know that there was that many quality of fish in the city lakes, And it kind of opened my eyes there's actually some big fish in here, So
I think if memory serves, the state record was just west of the cities. I thought in a pretty small little pond. It's like an 8-15, isn't it?
Yes. I can't remember the lake, but it's like west of right by Lake Minnetonka. It's just like a small lake. So yeah, it's 8 pound, 15 ounces.
Yeah.
There was an 8 pounder caught in one of the boat tournament a couple years ago. It was 8 pounds and I want to say 8 pounds and 6 ounces or something.
Wow.
That's a big fish,
I swear I've seen its brother or one that could have. The co-angler and I saw it. We were at Coronas.
Okay, yep,
Coronas. And on that southern, that part of that southern swing, that point that comes out there, it was cruising in about 6 foot of water. It was super clear water. You could see it. We were running a little weed edge, and I was, about 10-15% trolling motor, speed, and we're just running this weed edge coming the opposite direction. I thought it was a carp at first when I saw it, and as it got closer, I remember I have no problem admitting this, I see this monster bass, swimming by, and I'm like, my jaw opens up. I'm like, oh my God. And my co-angler turns because we were fishing off this side and the thing come cruising on the opposite side. So he was coming right down the boat. We're looking at this and my co-angler looks over. He goes, is that a freaking bass? I'm like, oh my God. Yes. We started, by the time we realized what happens, we're throwing, you know, trying to throw out to it to see if we could get it. It's like, yeah, no, that's not happening. He saw us. He's not interested.
I believe Corona's got, you know, I believe that there's, you know, something like that there, because Corona's is such a healthy fishery. I mean, they're just munching on those little perch. You know, there's so many fingerling perch, and those smallmouth are so big because they feed off of those perch. And, you know, I believe there. I mean, I think state record, you know, and I will say that state record smallmouth, there's a good chance it's going to come out of Coronas, you know, because of how healthy that fishery is. You know, I think Jordan Westerman caught, I'm going to say like a 21 or 22 inch smallmouth there during the Minyak event. He won that event. That's a couple of years ago. Wow. And there were talks that, yeah, there's a potential that Coronas might have the state record of smallmouth, you know, in a few years, you know. So I fished it twice, and I've only ever caught one smallmouth, you know.
Yeah. And I always hit greens when I was there. I didn't really target the smallies when I was there.
Yeah, I feel like smallmouth are, I'm not good with smallmouth in lakes, right? It's just, I feel like they move so much.
Yeah, they're very nomadic.
I don't have enough experience, but if it's like, if it's predominantly a smallmouth fishery, then it's a little easier because they're more like your big largemouth, where they stage out on deep grasses and more of the offshore structure where you can kind of predict where they're going to be at, you know, because I won doing that, just fishing, you know, deep grass edge, catching big smallmouth like that. And I actually won Coronas this year for the Minyak event. I didn't pre-fish. I just showed up. I was just like, you know what? I got fourth last year. I don't have time to pre-fish. I'm just going to show up to, you know, basically go off of history and just see what happened. And I took, thank God I brought live scope. I went out there early in the morning. I was just fishing a flat off of some islands. And, you know, I caught some big fish doing that. But I was like, it's like 2 hours in, I was like, well, I only got three fish on the board, and they're all good size, right? I was like, well, I can grind it off all day just catching two more, or I can try to go offshore on these deep grasses and then see if I can, you know, make something happen. And it's probably one of my funnest days of fishing. Went out there to start scoping, found a defined grass edge in like 12 feet of water, and I was like, well, man, there might be something there. So I threw a drop shot. I just watch everything on live scope. I saw a fish come out, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It's like, okay, well, I sat in one spot for, God, like 2 hours just doing the same pitch over and over and over again. I caught so many fish in one spot, but the problem was they're all like, you know, 15 to 16 inch, and I was like, oh, man. It took me a long time to get an upgrade, and in that event, I did catch a smallmouth, and it was one of my keeper, but that was just like so random. It's just like, on this rock vein on this flat, I just thrown a spinner bait out there and it bit it, you know, just blank cast. It bit it. So
there's lots of edges, lots of weeds and such in Coronas for sure. And you can find them as long as that light penetrates down. You can, I mean, you get some 15, 16 foot weeds, man, that are down there. Depending. Exactly. So last question for you, brother, when you're looking forward to, and you're looking at this schedule, what event jumps out to you, man? What's the one you're most looking forward to going to?
I'm going to have to say Lake of the Ozark.
Nice.
Because I was there this past fall and I've kind of fell in love with how everything's set up. Yeah. I'm not fond of dock fish. I'm not a big dock fishing guy. I know there's a ton of docks, but
I was going to say the docks there is insane.
Yes. But I'm not really into dock fishing. When I was there, I caught all my fish on bluff walls. Right. And there's Jordan,
plenty of those too.
Yeah, Jordan, he was like, I was like, did you do any dock fishing? He's like, yeah, I went and fished one dock for like 5 minutes and I gave up. And that's like, I was like, well, what did you go fish? He's like, well, I just basically went and fished bluff walls. And I was like, dude, I did exactly that. And then that's how the big old rat bait, you know, came about. So yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that. I saw a lot of good stuff that I want to go back to and try in the spring, because I know that, I think when we go there, it's going to be just right in that pre-spawn, right? Where they just
slowly
are moving up. So I figure, you know what? it might be good with the stuff that I see, you know. And
unless it's a really, really warm spring, then, you know, then they might be a little bit closer to the spawn. But yeah, I think we'll definitely be in that. Cool thing about LOZ, man, is that depending on where you launch, where you go, you can fish any, just about any way you want to fish, from from brush to bluff walls, to points, to flats, to docks. I mean, and you're going to find, I mean, every cast there, I mean, there's good quality fish in that water, man.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, that's going to be exciting. We've got, Eco Fishing Shop is coming on board for us for that event. They're going to be our event sponsor. We're going to be there with the award ceremony. We'll be at Eco. We've got a host hotel with the sleep in, all of it right there in Camdenton. Okay. So that's going to be the home base. That we'll be set up at. So yeah, man, it's going to be a ton of fun. Looks like we'll have food there at the award banquet, have some cool giveaways. Oh, so yeah, awesome. It's going to be, it's going to be an awesome, awesome event. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah. I am too. Well. I can't wait, you know, being up north, it's like, well, it's either ice fishing now or you just sit out until it's time to go. And I'm actually just looking forward to it, you know, because, well, my first event is going to be the Native No Limit on Lake Chickamauga. And nice. I've never fished it. So I was like, well, the last few years I've been, you know, going early, you know, starting my season early in March down south. So I was like, well, that gives me a perfect chance, you know. So
cool.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that. And yeah, I mean, Lake of the Ozark is, you know, what I'm looking forward to the most as far as the All American series go.
Sweet.
I've never fished Kentucky, but I've heard that it's kind of a hit and miss.
Yeah. You know? It's in its rebuild. There's no question about it. We've got a lot of support coming from the area, so the event's going to be a ton of fun, regardless. Mm-hmm. We've got Moore's Resort is going to be our host area for that. That's where the awards will be for that one, and so that's right there. A lot of water will be in play. You know, that old girl was legendary, man. Kentucky Lake was legendary for a lot of years. It got beat up, but it's about in year 4 or 5 now of its rebuild, and it's coming back, you know? And so I think who better than a field of, you know, the Midwest, you know, top anglers to head out there and just try to spread out and break this place down. And let's see what's in play there for sure. So I'm excited when you have local areas that are excited to have you come to town. That's a good thing for traveling anglers, because we've got, you know, we got a lot of support, like I said, coming from the tourist areas there. The resort is going to give out, you know, special deals for anglers, rates to stay there. And again, we'll have some entertainment going on, have some food at the awards. So it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Gene. Are you looking forward to lacrosse?
Unbelievably, my friend. Yes, I absolutely love lacrosse. What I didn't realize is I actually perform and do better on rivers. Lo and behold, my time as a kid growing up around them, then my time on the dive rescue team, learning swift water, learning how to read water, and then growing there, you know, the competitively fishing around those river rats down there, the Cade Laufenbergs and those guys in the boats, you know, the brothers that are down there. I mean, these guys live on the river. When you go get your teeth kicked in by those guys, man, I'm the kind of guy that I don't get disgruntled with that. When someone whoops me real good, it just fires me up. It's like, I got to beat them. I got to figure out what I'm doing wrong, you know, figure out what else I can do. So yeah, I personally love 7, 8, and 9. I love, the Prairie du Chien area. You know, that when you get the chance to fish 9, 10, 11, you know, that type of stuff. I love it all down there. Plus, Explore Lacrosse is a fantastic, the community loves tournaments coming into town.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude, I'm stoked.
I only asked because, you know, it seemed like they're either going to love it or they're going to hate it. There's just no in between, you know, when it comes to lacrosse. So that's why I just had to ask you. I mean,
it can be tough. It can be tough. I think what's hard too is that lacrosse is the kind of place that there's some people that have really good results every time they go there.
Right.
And so if you're the kind of person that looks at that and says, well, they're going to win. If that's your approach, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe a national Midwest regional, you know, series isn't for you then. Yeah, is exactly. I don't mean that disrespectful, and I most certainly want everybody to fish with us. Mm-hmm. I suggest change your mindset, man.
Yeah.
Because I promise you, lacrosse is no different than any other body of water. On any given day, if you know the stars align properly, you can win that thing from more than one or two areas. Oh, yes. I promise you that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, lacrosse, man. Lacrosse can crush someone's dream. Like it's you can go from here to zero just like that in lacrosse. And my biggest advice to people that never fish lacrosse is don't chase those brown ones.
No, good advice.
Do not chase them. You are gonna be in for disappointment. You know, I think Tyler was the first person where I've seen that actually, you know, was able to make those fish work from 3 days straight when they had that the 3 day events a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And I was just surprised. Like, holy, I mean, even Tyler admitted, he was like, dude, he didn't know that those fish are gonna be around. Like he,
yeah.
You know, because usually you'll find them pre-fishing is always going to be good no matter what you look at. And then tournament day, those browns just move out. And, you know, I learned that early on. I was like, you know, I'm not going to chase them because I've been left dry
just chasing them.
So I was like, you know, just chase those green ones. They're a lot more predictable. There's plentiful of them, you know.
And I mean, if you land on the brown ones on tournament day, count your lucky stars.
Exactly.
Drain the area down to where there's nothing left.
Exactly.
You know, and yeah, but you're 100% right, man. You if you find them, just take a mental note of it and move on because, they move so much.
Yeah. Yep. They definitely move so much. So.
Well, listen, brother, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show here and spending some time chatting with us. I'm excited to see you because I'll be at all the events as well, man. We need to connect up, grab a beer, grab something to eat or whatever when we're out there.
Yeah,
sure. I'm not going to be competing in any of these. I'll be on the water trying to get media coverage, trying to get some, you know, photos. But and we've got another couple things that we're working on that I'll be doing when I'm at this, but I will not be competing at the end of the day on in any of those since I'm going to be working there with that stuff. But like I said, I'll still be out. I want to stay plugged into what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, we'll definitely connect up and have a good time when we're out there.
Yeah. I appreciate for you having me on. And one last question I did want to ask you.
Yeah.
Is there any possible chance of having an event in Minnesota moving forward?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was actually in conversation this year. We started looking at things. So I will say at the very topical answer, you know, obviously Josh Booth is the ultimate deciding factor as he is the owner of the series and the tournament director. Yeah. He relies heavily on Troy and I to give him input, you know, and we hash out our decisions. It's not a dictatorship by any measure. But one of the things we all, you know, concurred on the fact was that trying to get permits in Minnesota as a national, you know, out of state trail is really, really a challenge. Minnesota does not make it real easy to do so. So that was the first piece. The other piece was where could we go that would have, you know, enough water to support, you know, the potential for a 75 or 100 angler.
Easy. We go up to the upper Mississippi where we catch nothing but smallmouth. Giant smallmouth, or you're going to need at least 95 plus inches to even cash a check. So
that's pretty exciting. Yeah. We should. So when it comes time, when we start looking at schedule for 25, make sure I'll reach out to you and that we kind of get your input and see, you know, get other people's thoughts. And we just have to look at logistics to make sure we can, you know, having support for these areas is really a big key to the longevity of the series. As much as we'd like to go to these off the beaten path places, if the local areas can't help us come to town,
right?
What that spells is just a short time span for the All-American because there's a lot of overhead, you know, well, not a ton, but there is overhead involved in putting these things on. We don't just want to put them on and do awards out of the back of our trucks anymore. We want to make this an event that you guys love, man, that you have, you have fun when you come to these things. So to do that, it takes, you know, local areas to support us. Right. So,
I mean, I get it. At the end of the day, All-American is still a business, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, yep. I get it, you know,
We just try to take the pressure down. We just try to, we're about to make a huge announcement here coming up in January with something that will really stamp home. When we say we are angler focused, we mean it, man. And we're about to make a big announcement here for this next season that's going to be available to every angler at every event that's going to really prove that, you know. And it'll be, it's kind of like that stamp of, yeah, man, we're doing something that no other series is doing. And we're doing this because we want to make sure the anglers have an amazing time when they're there. And we're doing this because we're working deals out with places and other entities so that we can, you know, bring this stuff to the field. So it's going to be a ton of fun, brother. It really is. I think 24 is going to be a remarkable year for us. And yeah, I'm stoked you're going to be at every one of them, man. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the goal. So,
yeah,
you know, whether I do well or not, all I know is that I'm going to be learning. You know, I'm going to be taking away something from each event and bringing back home, be able to apply it, you know. And that's what I've done in the past. But yeah, for sure, I'm excited for.
And that support team is behind you regardless of where you place. You know that now. You've been doing this long enough. Yes. They got your back no matter what.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, listen, man, thank you again. Folks at home, make sure head on out over to, if you want to follow Elvis at Facebook. We got his Facebook page up there. Also Instagram, follow along. He's got a lot of good content that goes on out there. Throw him some information. If you throw him a DM, if you want information on those glide baits, where he's getting them from. Actually, he's got a post out there, I think, put on where you're picking up some of those big old glides.
Yes.
Yep. So check that stuff out there. And of course, as always, when it comes to the All-American, make sure you're hitting our subscribe button. We are spun off now from the True Patriot Outfitters. We're not, we're produced by them, obviously, because I'm sitting over here, but we are our own. All right, folks, we're going to go ahead and wrap that up. As I said, this is an older broadcast that we had. We're not spun off. We were at one time, but we're all back under one big happy family, one big roof here. So hope you enjoyed the interview with Elvis. He's a really, really interesting dude. He has a mountain of information, just such a good person, man. And we're proud to have him on the All-American rosters out there when he comes out to compete. He's definitely a guy out there looking to take your money. So you need to bear with that. Hey, make sure to smash that subscribe button for us. We appreciate you joining us here on a Wednesday evening. This is limited. It'll only probably be going through February here. With these, we'll be done with the interview, and then we'll be back to, of course, just having once a week with the main show on Monday nights, which is the TPO Doc Talk podcast, brought to you by Battle Born Tackle, an online tackle distributor that is a veteran owned small business. Two amazing things to support there. Number one, small business. Number two, veteran owned. Can't go wrong with that. Thanks again, folks, for hanging with us here through the show. We hope you absolutely enjoyed the interview there. And as always, tight lines, be safe.
Anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.